Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Your Ben Jarofsky Show for this Wednesday, April 17th, starts now. On today's show, Ben welcomes back the man, the myth, and the legend, Chicago journalist Monroe Anderson. The Ben Jarofsky Show, a presentation of the Chicago Reader, chicagoreader.com for everything there is to know in the city of Chicago. If you want to know what to do, where to go, what to eat, what to drink, you want to get tickets for the Best of Chicago event coming up at the Lincoln Park Zoo, well, you just need to head to chicagoreader.com for all that. And if you want more Ben Jarofsky, simply head to chicagoreader.com/Jarofsky. That's J-O-R-A, B as in victory, S-K-Y.
Hello again, everybody. Ben Jarofsky. We're here. We're calling this Bleak and Doomy Wednesday, and here's why. Good friend Monroe Anderson is standing by. We're going to take a deep dive on all things, everything. I just have to tell you, sometimes you just got to laugh, ladies and gentlemen. So as you all know, I'm a diehard Bulls fan, and my beloved Chicago Bulls have been a fan since 1966. I stayed with them through thick and thin. There's that one brief moment when the Bulls exiled Michael Jeffrey Jordan, the single dumbest move any professional team has done in my lifetime, closely followed by the Chicago Bears' decision to draft Mitch Trubisky over Patrick Mahomes, which is the second dumbest decision done by a sports team in my lifetime. Third, I would say, oh my God, why am I doing this list? This shows how weird I am. Suddenly I'd win a list. Poor Monroe's sitting there while I rush through a list of dumb moves by Chicago sports teams. Bobby Hull, the Blackhawks exiled him. Greg Maddux, the Cubs didn't sign him. Anyway, so I'm all excited about my beloved Bulls. They're playing tonight. I got tickets to the game. They're in something called a play-in. You don't need to know what it is. It's like a wild card. If you win, there's a chance you get to the playoffs. It's for teams that didn't qualify for the playoffs. We're almost, okay? So for Bulls fans, it's a chance to go, yeah, one more time, cheer, and watch Benny the Bull do antics and dance to the songs and wave at yourself at the big screen picture and just get away from life for a while. So what do I see in my beloved Bright One? By the way, a newspaper. This is the Sun-Times would say I'm a sucker for loving the Bulls. The Bulls would say I'm a sucker for subscribing to the Sun-Times, the only person in the city of Chicago paying for the content. What do I get from the Sun-Times? I will show Monroe this headline. This is the headline I woke up to see in my beloved Bright One, home delivered every day at my expense. Quote, play in an exercise in futility. Oh, my God. Steve Greenberg, he's actually a pretty funny writer. Got to give him credit. He's a pretty funny writer. But, you know, these sports writers, they just like, they're such a cynical brew, Monroe. I get a picture of a Chicago sports writer waking up, having been up all night drinking, and he smokes, immediately lights a cigarette, coughs. He's got so much phlegm in his, got a deadline, and he hates his life. He hates sports. He hates the fact that he has to cover sports. He hates the fact that he has to go interview jocks who have nothing interesting to say and withhold it from him and are rude to him. And more than anything else, he hates the fans. Why? Because when he looks at the fans, he sees himself. You know, when you're, I got this line I do when I look in the mirror, I don't see this old man. I see a young Brad Pitt. Okay, so when Steve Greenberg or Joe Colley or any one of these Sun-Times reporters looks in the mirror, they don't see whatever they see. They see a young Paul Newman. No, a young athlete. You know what I mean? In the prime of his life, a young rhino. So they hate the fans because the fans remind them of how their existence is. So this is an article. Hey, why are you even going, Bulls fans? You're going to lose. And even if you win, you're going to lose on Monday. And the other day, Joe Colley, who covers the Bulls, he went so far as to go, the lame Betty the Bull popcorn thing. I love the Betty the Bull popcorn. Monroe, that's where Betty the Bull, who's the mascot, like throws the popcorn in the air. And my wife doesn't like it. Okay, it's like the world's divided on Benny the Bull on the popcorn. Anyway, life is bleak. It's meaningless. It's miserable. Give up. Okay, thank you, Sun Times. And by the way, here's more subscription money so you can make my life miserable.
I was taking a walk yesterday.
Yes. And I
ran into one of my neighbors who works for Levitt at the Bull Stadium.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah. And so we were talking about sitting in the upper echelon where the corporations and the people with money hang out.
Oh, and the yeah. Okay. Yeah. Like skyboxes. Yes.
The skybox. Yeah. Yeah. And so I mentioned you. I said, usually I only watch the game from the skyboxes, but my friend Ben Jarofsky has seats, so I go mix with the great unwashed and we get out. And he says, I want to talk to him. He said, I love that guy. He's a real pit bull. He said, I've got a scoop for him, so could you give me his number?
Yes. And Monroe sat in those lowly seats of mine a couple years ago, and then kind of announced that if those are the seats from here on out, just don't bother asking him. But if I stumble upon some, I gotta admit, Monroe, you were honest. All right, you know.
The seats; it's the team. Life's too short to spend a couple of hours watching losers lose.
Every now and then they win.
Right.
But your
hope springs eternal. Is what you say.
No, you agree with Steve Greenberg, play in an exercise in futility.
Right, exactly.
Oh Lord, hold on. I'm gonna have another shot.
When I was a kid, my mother was into spanking. And so she'd announce to you, you're going to get this spanking.
Okay.
And what I do is go in the bathroom. I say I have to use the bathroom. I go and sit in the bathroom, hoping she'd forget about it. And she would say, come out of that bathroom. And that's how it is with the Bulls. They're going to get a spanking. They're just trying to prolong it.
So here's a question I have for you before we move on to the topics of the day.
Okay.
And this is a question that Bulls fans who go to games must confront at any given time. What's more difficult to sit through? A great back and forth game in which the Bulls lose at the buzzer one way or the other. Either they miss the shot or the other team hits the shot. We lose by 1 or 2 points.
Yeah.
Or a blowout, where the Bulls have been blown out by midway through the first quarter, and you know the whole entire game is just going to be mired in misery and like a 30 to 40 point blow. I've suffered both.
Yeah.
I'm curious in your thoughts, which one is worse? The heartbreak at the buzzer in which you could have won, or the blowout where you had no chance of winning?
Am I at home or am I at the stadium?
No, you're at the stadium. You're not watching on TV. You're at the stadium. You've paid money for your ticket. You're not like the Steve Greenberg and Joe Colley who get it for free and then mocking everybody who has to pay as suckers and saps. You've paid for a ticket and you're sitting in your seat. Go.
Okay. Well, since I'm going to be there with you if I'm doing it. I like the idea of what's worse is the losing by 1 point, because if they're mopping the floors with them, then we can talk politics. We have to watch the game.
my recollection is that we spent the whole game talking politics anyway. But that
wasn't much of a game either, if I recall.
I don't remember who I care. You know what? Did we see the Knicks play the Bulls? I can't remember. It was two seasons ago. But I actually agree with you. I've had so many enjoyable White Sox games with Adolfo Mondragon, where it was just I don't even know what was going on in the field, and we had just so much fun. We were just talking from start to finish. It was a nice night, and the Bulls. You're right. When you really get into a great basketball game and you lose at the end, it's like, oh. So yeah, blowout in some ways easier to. All right, let's move on to more.
If I'm at home, that's why I ask. If I'm at home, I go wash the dishes or something else.
No, last night. Oh my goodness! If I'm at home watching a game, and it's a horrendous, heartbreaking defeat in the closing seconds, I have to walk around the block at least just to get it out of my. I gotta go for a walk. I gotta get it out of my system. Anyway, by the way, how about this little piece of joy that was in the Sun? Sometimes it just brings me nothing but joy. I got to share this with you, Monroe. This was a quote from the – this is so classic. This is the newspaper person's attitude toward democracy in Chicago. So there was a debate on the city council floor about the mayor's housing – his program to borrow money and build low-income housing and use retired TIF districts to pay it back. Folks, you're not going to understand the details if I give it to you anyway. So just that was the issue, all right? I shouldn't be Steve Greenbergian in my attitude about Chicago voters not being able to understand things. I'm sure you could if you put your mind on it. Anyway, so this was a reflection by the writer. It was talking about how aldermen are raising objections to Mayor Johnson's proposal. And this is the quote. When alderpersons sense political weakness, they tend to push back even harder. And that appears to be what's happening now. And this is, when I read that, I laughed, Monroe. That is the quintessential Chicago journalist's attitude about democracy. That largely it's futile, that largely the way it works is that you need a very strong, dictatorial, tough mayor to keep everyone in line. And they will do nothing but follow meekly like little sheep, voting for whatever you want. But if you allow them any sense that they have any power, any sense, that even if it's a crumb of a power, if you give them any opportunity to voice their objection to whatever it is that you're doing, it'll be chaos that will follow, and they'll just want more. And so you got to keep them down. You got to keep them tight. You got to whack them every now and then. And I'm like, oh my God, this is how so many journalists in the city of Chicago view democracy. They have a lower regard for democracy than the Sun-Times sports writers have for the Bulls, which is really hard to achieve. Do you share that attitude about democracy? You've been a journalist in this town for a long, long time, and you've been on the other side. So do you have such a disdainful attitude about alders that you just got to keep them locked down or they'll ask for too much? Go.
How are you applying democracy to the Chicago City Council?
Well, okay. Democracy is a system where you get to ask questions and challenge the mayor on whatever proposal the mayor has. You can propose amendments, and then it could be the discussion and debate on your amendments. And then they either pass or fail. And the public presumably will benefit because the enlightened debate, don't laugh, that emerges from the city council scrutinizing a public document that the mayor has proposed will sort of enlighten everybody, as opposed to, let's say, the parking meter deal, where Mayor Daley told the alderman, you will pass this in 5 days or whatever it was, whether you've read it or not, whether you know what's in it or not. And as a result, we sold an asset worth $10 billion for $1 billion. So that's what I mean by democracy. Go ahead.
I repeat, what does democracy have to do with the Chicago City Council? Under Daley, under Daddy Daley, there was a brief fleeting moment under Harold Washington. Sawyer, it was when Sawyer was mayor, it was all for none and none for all. It was total confusion back then. I mean, that's not how we see government here in this city. So it's not democracy, and therefore the reporters who are covering it, they see it as a three card Monte game. And they describe it and report on it as such.
It is so pathetic and sad. Don't you wish there was more democracy in the Chicago City? But I mean democracy, a check and a balance. But I mean by democracy, a willingness to question an all-powerful mayor without being subjected to ridicule by absolutely everyone, from the press corps to your fellow alders. You know how they used to make fun of, oh, God, what a do-gooder. You know, anyone who asked a question.
Right. Well, the other problem is most of the alders we have would know democracy if it smacked them in the face. So, I mean, they're just trying to get a little publicity, maybe get a little extra something on the side. This is not government. When I was press secretary, a now deceased alderman, who shall remain nameless,
okay,
but as he was adjusting his wig on his head.
Oh, I know who you're talking about. One of my favorite aldermen. He had a twin brother. Go ahead. Yeah.
As he was upset with me because he had sent someone to the press office that was supposed to get a job because he sent them.
Yeah.
And, of course, I didn't want to upset him, but I wasn't about to put somebody in the press office who was beholden to a hairpiece adjusting alderman. So I got around it.
Wait, so I just want to clarify something Monroe just said, in my humble opinion.
Yes.
His objection to hiring this alderman's candidate for the job really had nothing to do with the fact that this particular alderman wore a wig or a toupee or whatever it was. Okay, right. That's just a detail, a colorful detail that he's throwing into his narrative there.
Right, a mean one.
Yeah, a mean one below the belt. What you really objected to, I will suggest, is that you would have an employee in the press office who's, by and large, the press office job in City Hall is deliver propaganda that makes the mayor look good.
Right,
and
your job is to make the mayor look good. Right.
Yeah, whose mission in life would be making this particular alderman look good, and he wouldn't really care about the mayor. That is what I think you were objecting to. It had nothing to do with his hairpiece. Am I correct about that?
You're absolutely right, and this particular alderman had no idea of what democracy was and how it performed.
I will actually push back a little bit. May he rest in peace, Robert Shaw, I believe, who you're talking about, and alderman of the Ninth Ward, one of the first politicians I met when I moved to the city of Chicago way back when in 1981. What a character he was. May he rest in peace. I thought he was a pretty astute student of Chicago politics and
Chicago politics. Are we talking about Chicago politics, or are we talking about democracy?
Well, I mean,
those are two different things.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, in principle, we are a democracy. But you're right.
In name, not in principle.
Yes. And it's interesting because Robert Shaw, wow, what an interesting guy. I had no idea we'd end up talking about him, Monroe, but he was a fascinating guy in many ways. So he and his brother moved to the West Side when they first showed up in Chicago. I believe they came from Arkansas. And they went on the west side, and they couldn't get traction on the west side. So they moved to the far south side of Chicago back in the 60s when it was changing from a white neighborhood to a black neighborhood. And they sort of planted their political flag in the communities of Roseland and South Chicago, way far south, like 110th Street, something like that, in Michigan. And when the balance of the war changed from white to black, Robert Shaw was elected alderman. Chicago, man, what a race. Like the white guys in the war just didn't have the numbers to defeat him. And then he made an alliance with Jane Byrne, which was like the dumbest move he could have made. He endorsed Jane Byrne.
I thought you said he was a great student of Chicago politics.
He didn't make mistakes, you know.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Well, he was a student. Look, this pencil, you see it? It's called an eraser. We all make mistakes. But that was really a bad move.
Right. And
he was voted out of office because he was on the wrong side of the Harold Washington movement.
Right.
Do you ever wish that Brandon Johnson had that kind of power in Monroe? Like, there are black aldermen who will vote against Brandon Johnson. Could you imagine a black alderman voting against Harold? Well, it just didn't happen.
Oh, they wanted to. Bill Henry was very upset with Harold, you know, because his thing was, okay, well, the white guys ripped everybody off for decades. Now it's our turn to rip everybody out, and Harold's talking this fair and squareness stuff.
Yeah. But he had to shut up and go along with it. You know what I'm saying? Because Harold Washington was so popular.
Right, exactly. And knew what Harold knew what he was doing. He knew how to reward and publish and punish in a democratic concept.
Yeah. Anyway, so Harold.
Because you didn't read my chapter in Chicago's Modern Mayors on Sawyer, but in there, I pointed out that when Alderman Evans was talking about being the heir apparent, that was a fiction. It was very Trumpian on his behalf, because Harold, when he said he was going to be mayor for 20 years, he was serious about it. And there had been a meeting at Catfish Digby's with some black politicians who met to discuss a possible heir to Mayor Washington. Should something unforeseen happen. He was so pissed off, he called him up, gave him a piece of his mind, and that topic was never, ever discussed again.
Yeah. For the record, I did read that chapter, not in the actual book, but you sent me, you don't remember, you sent me a draft.
Yeah.
Oh, that's Judge Evans calling in.
Right. To supply it.
Anyway, neither here nor there. To conclude the Robert Shaw story, he lost in 83, quickly ran and was reelected in 87 by pledging complete and total devotion to Harold Washington. And I remember him saying, I'll never make that mistake again. So democracy, there is something, you know, the voters had to say, Monroe, there is still sort of a democracy. All right.
Brandon doesn't have that power.
No, he does not.
Now,
and nor does he have the personality to wield it. I mean, Harold Washington was not afraid to wield, you know.
Right, exactly. Well, you know, 20 years from now, Brandon might have that too.
Maybe, yeah. There's a big difference in terms of his age and experience.
Right.
And Harold was a boxer. People don't know it, but he boxed as a kid, so he was tough.
Right.
I mean, he wasn't afraid to mix it up. All right. God, I have a lot of love for boxers. I'm going to been really watching a lot of Mike Tyson stuff lately, Monroe, but we're not going to discuss that. We are going to discuss instead a poll that I just saw in the Washington Post that will enable you to address two topics, Donald Trump and his ongoing trial, hush money trial in New York, and the life and legacy of O.J. Simpson, because O.J. died after we did last week's show. So our listeners have not heard you on the subject of O.J. And I'm sure you have a lot of interesting thoughts and observations about O.J. And so I'll just start with this poll that the Washington Post just released. And this is just a staggering statement about where we are, politically speaking, in America today. And without getting into the absolute specifics, this is what you need to know. MAGA, that is Republican voters, have a more favorable attitude toward OJ than they have toward Biden. Democrats, in contrast, have a more favorable attitude to OJ than they have to Trump. Now, keep in mind, listeners, just to remind you one more time, O.J. Simpson was a great football player and a mediocre actor and TV pitchman who murdered his wife and got away with it. That's me speaking. Let's see what Monroe has to say about that. So at the very, most people in America assume that he's a murderer. So I'll repeat this. MAGA has a higher opinion of O.J. the murderer than they do of Biden. And Democrats have a higher opinion of O.J. the murderer than they do of Trump. There is something wrong with this picture, Monroe Anderson. Your thoughts?
O.J. is dead. And as Malcolm X once pointed out 50 years ago or so, that Americans love dead black leaders. They don't care much for them when they're alive. Now, O.J. was never a leader, but as a celebrity, he was once beloved. And then they burned his Heisman after his wife and her lover ended up on the wrong end of a knife. So wow. Anyway, yeah. First of all, O.J. did it. I watched the entire trial. I had the fortune of working at a TV station with my own private office, so I could sit and watch the trial every day. And call it work.
Yeah. So there was in real time.
Yes.
Was there any doubt in your mind?
Not once the trial started and the evidence started piling up.
Yeah.
You know, I during that time I went to a party my next door neighbor's house, and this middle-aged black woman was at the party. And she was defending O.J. And the first thing I did was I pointed out to her, I said, you realize that if O.J. was here and there was a blonde standing behind you, he'd knock you down to get to the blonde.
You said that?
Yes. Yes. Had you were around to do the disclaimer?
No, I didn't go. The views and opinions of Monroe at this party.
Exactly. Right. You were around for that. Right, exactly.
You need me in your life to just be there. Wow. You said that to this lady?
Yes, yes.
What did she respond?
She didn't respond to that. So then I said to her, well, instead of it being Nicole, what if that were your daughter? Oh, man, complete 180-degree turn. Well, if that happened to my daughter, isn't it?
Wow.
OJ's advantage in that trial was he came to represent to black people all the injustices that had been heaped upon us. And finally, somebody got away with it.
Yeah.
Got, yeah.
So Monroe, I can't remember this. Did you cheer when OJ was acquitted? What was your response when OJ was acquitted?
I was in the conference room. I remember exactly. I was in the conference room at WBBM TV. I was having some sort of, I don't remember what meeting I was conducting, but I got a call from a reporter from Indigo, the black newspaper. And she asked me my opinion. And I said to her, he got away with murder.
Yeah, he got away with murder.
And she gasped. She couldn't believe that I was actually saying that. And again, there was no Ben Jarofsky around this day.
Using a Ben. He get away with murder.
Right.
See, like,
not from her perspective. Not from her.
Well, that. I should bring it back to the politics, but see, there's many issues here. So you have to separate your attitude as to whether you wanted to see him get off from whether you believed he did it. And yeah. Follow where I'm going with this, Monroe. The reality is, the death of people we don't know is largely an abstraction. So we don't feel it, like, we don't feel it in our hearts. As if, God forbid, with someone we did know and loved. So the death of someone that in LA, and you live in Chicago, and you don't know them, you never met them, you never met OJ, it's all just an abstraction. It's relatively meaningless. So what's more important for some people, a lot of black people, is how unfair and unjust our criminal justice system is.
Right.
All right. And so when OJ gets off, that's like, and we saw all the deficiencies in the way the LAPD operated, but they were on full display.
Yeah. And we knew Furman was a racist.
Yes. Unbelievable. He said he never used the word, and then they had recordings of him using the word. Anything they say. So when you see all that, and it's just all an abstraction anyway, then you could cheer. But if it's, like, to your point, not an abstraction, if it's someone that really matters to you, you're going to be outraged and devastated. Do you follow me? And the thing is that white people, she was just as much an abstraction. Nicole was just as much an abstraction to white people. And they got outraged.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so obviously there was a lot more going on.
During that time, I went to a party at one of my neighbor's house, and a white Chicago policeman was there, and he told me that OJ was guilty. This, the trial's still going on, and he said the way you know when somebody's guilty or not is how they spend the night in jail. If you're innocent and you've been arrested for murder, you don't sleep. You're prowling and you're behind bars. You're trying to figure out how you can get a lawyer or somebody to clear your name and get you out of there. If you committed the murder, then you're just there and you have a good night's sleep. And because you've been so fraught with anguish and what have you that you're tired and you just sleep. And he said that OJ had a good night's sleep his first time.
How does he know?
I know, exactly. Well, I floated that by Judge Pinchum.
Oh,
and Pinchum, okay. And Pinchum said, that's crazy. Yeah, not what he's talking about.
I love Judge Pinchum. May he rest in peace. Eugene Pinchum, ladies and gentlemen, what a legend. Lived not far from where Robert Shaw lived. It all's coming together in the show today. Truly one of the... Oh, man. You know what, Monroe? It's a shame. Judge Pinchum would have been such a great guest on this podcast because he could go off, couldn't he?
Yes. You know, and he taught at Harvard. every year. He's a guest professor at Harvard.
I did not know that.
He told me. I didn't know it. He told me.
Did not know that. All right. So let's get back to the politics and leave the trial behind for a moment. So my reading of that Washington Post poll is that the hatred each side has for the other is far more intense than the hatred they have for OJ, because each side has an unfavorable view of OJ. It's not like OJ suddenly.
But this is what you have to factor in on that. When Biden won and was first in office, there was not this hatred of him. In fact, there were complaints then at that time that they couldn't sell any anti-Biden merch because nobody was interested in it. So since he's been in office, Trump and the MAGA movement have been working night and day to turn him into some sort of villain.
Yeah.
And just like with their policies and programs, the Republicans I'm speaking of, there's nothing to it.
Yeah, I'm with you. But they've successfully gaslit America.
Right.
That's the point I make.
Right.
And it's beyond anything I've ever seen. And I think it crosses all realms. I mean, it's in local politics. I noted this last week in a column I wrote about Lori Lightfoot. I was reflecting, having read Gregory Pratt's book on her, I was reflecting on the fact that the people who voted for her the first time around, and I'm thinking of your neighbors on the north side and then the Gold Coast, turned on her. And I could not think of anything she had done that would so offend them. She was not a lefty. She did not promote programs that I would want. She did not promote programs that tore down like the TIF program and redistributed the money. Quite the contrary. She kept that going. She did what she could to keep property taxes relatively low, which is generally what Northsiders want. She kept intact all the magnet schools that Northsiders love. I can't think of anything she did that would offend Northsiders, but they turned on her. And they embraced, God help us all, Paul Vallis, of all people. And it was like, I just think that Chicago, in this particular case, this subset of Chicago voters, North Side liberals, Gold Coast types, have been gaslit to hate Lori Lightfoot. And I think about, like, what is it about Lori Lightfoot that I'm going to turn to you for your expertise because you are the world's most formidable authority on white people. But what is it about Lori Lightfoot that got all these people who just loved her and voted for her? It was none of her policies. I repeat, she did nothing that would a moderate or a conservative would find offensive, and yet they turned on her. What was it, Monroe? What was it in particular about Lori Lightfoot that got all your neighbors in Lincoln Park to turn against her?
Easy. It's so easy being the world's foremost authority on white people. Because the answer is that she wasn't running against anybody white. And then there came Paul.
Yeah.
They looked in the mirror and said, he looks like one of us. We think we like him more.
Oh, my God. I think you're right. Yeah, it wasn't really like taking a deep dive on the policy issues.
Right.
Look in the mirror and then look at him.
Nice. He reminds me of my uncle, my father, my son, and my brother.
None of whom I would want to be mayor, okay? I can't think of one uncle or brother. Well, I don't have a brother, but whatever. None of whom. That's so true. That is so true. So in terms of Biden, listen, I've seen the Republican hit machine And they turned Michael Madigan into the enemy of Illinois. And so many people in Illinois have an unfavorable view of Michael Madigan, even though his, I mean, like, that he was a middle of the road guy. You know, most of you centrists should love Michael Madigan. And they just hated him. And it was, you know, Browner and Griffin financing all those hate campaigns against him, just brainwashed voters.
Well, the reason, the reason Hillary is not president right now is because what she classified as the vast right wing conspiracy machine worked against her for all those years. I think that's what she got. I know it was a vast right wing something. I think it's spirit.
Well, okay, so we're getting to Clintons, and so I'm going to throw this at you.
Yes.
So your old friend Ray Hennenio was on the show a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
And he's coming back because it was quite a show. We had a lot of fun going at it. If you didn't listen to that show, ladies and gentlemen, I urge you to listen to him. But Ray is a very unique character in Chicago. He's basically a Republican. He's in denial. He absolutely refuses to admit he's a Republican.
A Palestinian Christian Republican.
Yeah, Palestinian Christian Republican comedian married to a Jewish woman. He's just seems like a world of contradictions. Right,
and also a spokesman for Cicero.
And a public spokesman for Cicero. And as he points out, he was fired from his job at the Chicago Sun-Times unfairly. I believe it was unfairly. I'm with you, Ray. I'm the only journalist in Chicago who stands by you. And had no choice but go into the PR business. And so he has kind of scornful of journalists who mock him as a PR spokesperson. He goes, none of them. We're going to put food on my kid's plate. And Monroe, how can you argue with that? You know what I'm saying?
Like, exactly.
So anyway, he's a very interesting guy, funny guy, I think. And I don't agree with him on much because he's conservative.
As the world's foremost authority are white people, Ray thought of himself as white. And then there was some sort of anti-Muslim thing going on about 20 years ago. I can't remember what it was. And suddenly he went, whoa, I'm not white. I'm this. But I think he's back to being white again.
No, okay. So Ray, I hope you're hearing this. Come on. Ray's a big believer in the First Amendment. So he, I wish he were here to respond because I know just how he's going to respond. I know Ray. I know what he's going to say. He's going to talk about how he learned he wasn't white when he went to Bogan High School on the southwest side of Chicago back in the early 70s, and with his sort of darker than pale skin, people just assumed that he was black or, you know, a little too close to being black. He actually told that story when he was on.
I knew he wasn't white. In fact, he had applied when I was at BBM TV. He had applied to work there. He wanted to do a talk show or something. And the white person that was in charge of hiring said to me, he looks like a carpet salesman. To me, Indian, one of those Afghan or Indian carpets at your stores.
So definitely...
didn't have them on the air.
Ray, that's Monroe speaking. I didn't say anything like that and bring you on the show with Monroe. But the point is this. One of the riffs he went on had to do with the Clintons. And he was, I thought he did a pretty good job of explaining why it is that so many people have disdain for the Democratic Party and the Clintons symbolize him, Monroe. So let me give you this argument and then get your response.
Okay.
That is this. So he was saying that a Trumpian racist will let you know up front what he or she is all about. Okay? So know what you're dealing with. Yeah. Whereas the Clintons and Democrats will pretend, and Biden will pretend that they care about you, but they don't really care about you at all. And so they're phonies. And so that aspect of being phonies turns him off to Clintonian Democrats, even more than it would turn him, the open hatred of Trump and MAGA turns him off to Trump and MAGA. I think I've done a pretty good job distilling his worldview. Your thoughts?
Yeah. That used to be a belief in the Black community back in the 60s. And it held until we started getting the new Republican Party. And then Black people of some knowledge and experience decided, well, if we got to deal with this, it's better for them to be pretending to not be racist than just being out there full blown waving the flag and throwing the N word, throwing nigger around, not the N word, but nigger around carelessly.
Yeah, I listen. I am with you on this one. I mean, we talked about this last week. It's just like the way Trump behaves, the way MAGA behaves across the board.
Right.
Just is so offensive to me. I don't know how in a million years I could vote for him. So it gets back to the issue of Trump versus Biden. I mean, Trump versus OJ. And I thought, how would I answer that pollster? You know, who do I find more offensive, Donald Trump or O.J. Simpson? Now, I don't think the question was posed that way directly. I think it was just, you know, what's your opinion of Donald Trump and what's your opinion of O.J.? And then the unfavorables were higher for Trump among Democrats than the unfavorables for O.J. So I'll put you on the spot. How do you compare O.J.? Who do you find more offensive, Donald Trump or O.J. Simpson?
Trump. OJ committed a crime of passion. And he wasn't running around killing every white woman he could get his hands on her and love her. It was just his white woman that he was basically supporting. Yeah, you know, and I'm guessing at this, I don't know for sure. But my analysis of it while the trial was going on and as the details came out was that he was pissed off because he was paying for the car, he was paying for the house, he was doing all this, and she had another lover. And I don't even think it was racial. OJ would kill them if they were, if he was Black. I just think it was like, I'm paying all this money, and there she is, got this other dude, this young man. You know, Morgan Wallen, the country singer,
mm-hmm.
who has been in a lot of trouble of late, he wrote a song about his life with his girlfriend. She left him for a younger man. The song is Thinking About Me. And it's a really... this song is in my head, and I'm not even a country music fan, but I heard it, and it's just such a well-written song. But the news broke last week after he was in all this trouble that she, in fact, married this young guy. She was 30, he was 22. So, I mean, it wasn't a terrible differential in age. In a reverse situation, it would have been quite acceptable.
Well, I got to tell you, I've never heard that song, but when we're done, I will track it down. I'm looking at the lyrics now. Don't know where you're at. Don't know where you've been. Don't know nothing about that boy you're into. Don't feel bad for you, but I feel bad for him. And all the hell you're going to be putting him through.
Right. I mean, this thing is so personal.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't even know who Morgan Wallen was until of late, you know, with all the controversy he's in.
Yeah.
And of course he was what I expect from country or western singers. He's a racist, you know, so he's using the N word.
Yeah. Yeah, but no, yeah.
The song is very, the tune, I can't get the tune out of my head.
I will have to definitely check this song out, the lyrics himself. He did not write the lyrics, by the way, ladies and gentlemen. He did not write. I looked at to see who the songwriter was. All right, well, we're running out of time. We barely even got it. But you know what? Trump's trial's not going anywhere, and this is how it goes with me and Monroe.
Yeah, but we have to talk about one thing, and that's how he is in trouble, and he knows it, and he's trying to act brave, but he looks like a fallen man. He looks like a beaten man. The rubber has finally hit the road, as they say.
Is that your, I mean, I had a similar feeling. Right. And it you know, it's, I watched his defiance when he's speaking to a crowd.
Yeah.
Like the, I don't know if you saw the Pennsylvania rally he had this weekend.
Yeah.
He goes on the road over the weekend when he's not in trial and has rallies, and he's really defiant and mocks the judges and mocks the prosecutors and mocks the jury. But yes, you're right. When he goes to the court, he does look kind of defeated. This is, I'm looking at this picture right now. He looks so glum. This is a picture of him in the court, in the courtroom right before the trial begins. And I'm going to read this to you, Monroe. So this is an article in the New York Times. Seven jurors are seated, including a nurse, a teacher, and two lawyers. All right. And this juror, this goes to show you how people are bending over backwards for Trump. All right. And I'll just read you this article from the New York Times. Although prosecutors might have the upper hand in Manhattan, one of the nation's most Democratic counties, there were glimmers of hope for Trump. Just one stubborn juror can torpedo a case and hang a jury, an outcome that would be a victory for Mr. Trump. The Harlem teacher, the Harlem teacher who was allowed to sit on the jury, who hails from a family of police officers, said she appreciated Mr. Trump's bombastic style and referred to him as President Trump, a title of respect and one his own lawyers use in court. Quote, President Trump speaks his mind, and I'd rather that than someone who's in office who you don't know what they're thinking, she said. That's the direct quote. I stumbled a little bit reading it, but that's the direct quote. One more time. Yeah. President Trump speaks his mind, and I'd rather that than someone who's in office who you don't know what they're thinking. If you're a prosecutor, would you allow that potential juror to sit on the jury, or would you use your challenge against, I don't know if it's a him or a her. Let's just say it's a him. Go ahead.
I'd use my challenge. but they only get 10 of them, so they have to choose carefully. I would have used a challenge on that particular person and got them out of there.
Well, Donnie, if you get off on this hush money trial, I think you should send some flowers to this particular juror, because I don't know, man, just the concept, that sure looks like, it's so interesting. It just goes to show you how it seems like they're bending over backwards to be as fair. No.
This is the belief among the MAGA crowd. I mean, that person just sounds pure MAGA to me. Yeah. I've watched them be interviewed on TV, and, the comedy show, The Daily Show.
Okay, yeah.
Has this one staffer who goes out and interviews MAGA people all the time,
yeah,
to expose how ignorant they are. And that's their mindset.
Yeah, because
when they say you know where he's coming from. Basically, he's coming from where they're coming from, and that's being racist.
Well, and they're also going and sort of drifting into Ray Hanania country, which is, there's some parallels between the attitude that Ray expressed when he's on the show, which is, you know, at least I know where you're coming from when you're honest about how much you hate me, as opposed to.
Except they aren't saying that. They're saying, I know where you're coming from. You're honest about how much you hate them, and I do too.
You know what? You're absolutely correct. once again, Monroe Anderson, an astute analysis analyst about, I actually don't know if this person's white or black, so I shouldn't say.
If I had to bet some money,
yeah.
I know where my money would go.
I think you're right about that. Right. Ray is definitely coming back to the show, I have to say.
And Ray is my friend. I took some shots at him just because I felt like it, because I could, but not, he's been a good friend to me for 40 years almost. 40
years. So yeah. We're going to bring them together. Actually, you were on the show with Ray once years ago. I probably don't remember, back in the studio.
Yeah, no, I remember. Yeah. No, I kid him sometimes.
Yeah. And he gets a few shots back in himself. He's not afraid to punch Ray Hanania.
Right.
All right, we've run out of time. And so, Monroe, thank you very much. And we'll talk to you next Wednesday while we're in the midst of celebrating one Bulls triumph after another as our beloved Chicago Bulls make their way toward another championship. Even I can't say that with a straight face, Monroe.
Why don't we try this?
Okay.
The 20s Bulls are about to become the 90s Bulls.
Wow. Oh, I have, this is a little embarrassing, because the algorithms have figured out what I like on my Instagram. So I constantly get flooded with footage of 90s Bulls stuff. Okay, I'm just forever looking at Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen, Tony Kukoc, Dennis Rodman, Horace Grant. You go on and on.
Basketball gods.
Yes, basketball gods. I think the Sun Times would be excited about the Bulls. You know, they jumped on that bandwagon, Monroe, when the Bulls were hot. Oh my God, the bright one was specials. Special section on the Bulls. Quick, buy it.
I was press secretary during some of that, so we would go to the games.
Oh God, yeah. We wasn't sitting in up in the nosebleeds,
and they would be playing the Wild Wild West. That was their theme song to bring about.
Yeah, you were press secretary when the Bulls. At the very sort of the beginning of the Jordan era, right before they broke through.
I guess so. 88.
They yeah. were.
Yeah. Yeah.
Rising.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So
that was exciting. It was exciting back then. Yeah.
When they actually won, Daley was in office.
Yeah. Yeah. It was exciting. Yeah. Right. Right.
Showing up at all the rallies. Hey, Richard Daley. All right, very good. That's Monroe Anderson. Every Wednesday in the Ben Jarofsky Show. Thank you very much, Monroe. Also want to thank producer Chris, who does an outstanding job. And Monroe agrees with me when I say, hey, producer Chris, give yourself a raise. Take it out of petty cash. Peace and love, everybody.
And remember, previous Ben Jarofsky shows, all available for download at your leisure at chicagoreader.com. You can follow Ben on Instagram if you're into the social media. It's at Benny J Show. And don't forget to tell your friends, like, subscribe, and follow The Ben Jarofsky Show on your favorite streaming and podcasting platforms.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.